Dove started his speech by Dove Reeves is on my brain. Dove, Jewel, sorry, Jewel. Jewel started his speech by saying, well, some things were a shadow, so they were not to continue. Okay, that's what he said. Later on, he said he didn't have a change, but we'll talk about that in a minute. Some things were continued because they were just a shadow. Did I get that right, Jewel? Is that what you said? I wrote that as best I can. Some were things were shadows, so they were not to continue. Okay. Everybody turn to Colossians 2, 16 and 17. It says, let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink, in respect of a holy day or of the new moon or of the Sabbath days, which are a shadow of things to come, but the body is of Christ. Now, he said, Jewel said, some things were a shadow, so they were not to continue. And that's right. That's what a shadow means, a figure. And the opposite of that would be the antitype. Okay? And generally speaking, the Old Testament, you had the shadows and the figures, like animal sacrifices were a figure or a shadow of Jesus' sacrifice. And the New Testament, you have the reality. And that's what's going on here. He's saying the Sabbath was a shadow. You see that? The Sabbath, and Jewel says, some things were a shadow, so they were not to continue. Well, Colossians 2, 16 and 17 says the Sabbath was a shadow. Now, everybody turn to Matthew chapter 5. In Matthew chapter 5, Jewel read this as if it was an argument on his side, trying to prove his position, but I've been tempted to bring this passage up as an affirmative proof for my position. Let's notice what it says in Matthew 5, 17 and 18. Think not that I've come to destroy the law of the prophets. I'm not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Try to remember that until I finish the next verse. Think not that I have come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Excuse me. For verily I say unto you, till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law, till all be fulfilled. Now simply the answer is, Jesus said he came to fulfill. Verse 17. Now did he? Did he accomplish what he came to do? He did. And then he says in verse 18 that the law would pass when it's fulfilled. So that proves that the law passed when Jesus completed his mission here on earth, when he fulfilled it. That would include his death. Now let's talk about this in a little more detail. Verse 17, think not that I am come to destroy the law. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. And what did Jesus come to do? Fulfill the law. Now verse 18, till heaven and earth pass, or as the parallel says in Luke 16, 17, he said there, the parallel, it is easier for heaven and earth to pass. One jot or in one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Till would imply then that the law would pass when it was fulfilled. If it's not to pass till the things are fulfilled, that would imply... Hold my time. Deal.
Is that real?
Yeah, you whisper to him a little bit lower. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Start my time. Just like the Bible when it says that Joseph knew not Mary till Jesus was born, that would mean that after Jesus was born, Joseph and Mary had normal relations, and of course we know that Jesus had some siblings. Okay? So the Catholic Church doesn't understand that, but I'm sure that Jewel does. That's the force of the word till here, that the law would not pass until it is fulfilled. But Jesus had just got through saying, Jewel, that Jesus would fulfill it. Compared to the union boss. What if a union boss were to say, till heaven and earth pass, we won't go back to work till all our demands are met? That would mean, Jewel, they would go back to work when their demands are met. Right, Jewel? Okay. So Matthew 5:17 says that Jesus came to fulfill the law, and he completed that. In John 19:30 on the cross, he said it is finished. Luke 24:44 teaches that Jesus fulfilled the law and the prophets. So verse 18 teaches that all the law, that is every jot and tittle, did pass when Jesus fulfilled it. Notice this illustration. I got this, I think, from Gene Frost. Should I have an appointment with the dentist and announce to the receptionist, I have come not to destroy my appointment, but to fulfill it, what would that mean? I would complete all the appointment called for. I would have fulfilled the appointment and not destroyed it, not canceled it. Would the appointment still be in force? No. The appointment would still be in force. I came not to destroy the appointment with the dentist, but to fulfill it. After I fulfilled it, I didn't destroy it, I didn't cancel it, but after I fulfilled it, it wouldn't be in force anymore because I fulfilled it. Now, I want you to notice one little thing that I accidentally skipped over here. If this passage were teaching Jewel's position, it says not one jot or not one tittle would pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Would that include circumcision, animal sacrifices, and Levitical priesthood? And I'm talking about physical circumcision here. Aren't those jots and tittles of the old law? Certainly they were. So if Jewel's application of this passage were true, it would mean that we still have to do physical circumcision, Levitical priesthood, and animal sacrifices, because he would be saying that all the jots and tittles, all of them, even to the smallest parts of the letters, would still be applicable today. But that's not the point. The point is, the summary, the law would pass when it was fulfilled. Verse 18. Jesus said in verse 17, he came to fulfill it. He either did or he didn't. I know Jewel believes that he did. Therefore, the law did pass. That's a very good passage to prove that Jewel's position is incorrect. And then he read that poem in his first speech, and I didn't get around to responding to it, but he repeated something in his second speech that I now will respond to. He said, Pat, and he said this many times, Pat, you just don't want to be like that Jew, do you? You just don't want to be like that Jew, do you, Pat? Well, the Jews practice physical circumcision, Levitical priesthood, animal sacrifices, and Jewel practices none of those. Jewel, you don't want to be like those Jews, do you? You just don't want to be like those Jews, do you, Jewel? You won't practice physical circumcision, animal sacrifices, Levitical priesthood. And then he said, well, in North Alabama, it would be impossible. You can't do animal sacrifices here. Well, if it's required, you'd need to move over there if that's where you had to do them. But let me ask you this question, Jewel. You can't do them over here in North Alabama. That'd be difficult. Is it animal sacrifices, are they still required over in Jerusalem then? Is that what you're saying? You can't do them because you live so far away. What about the people that live in Jerusalem? That argument implies that the people in Jerusalem are still required to do animal sacrifices. I don't believe Jewel believes that, but that's what the logic of his argument would say. And then, okay, let's suppose we granted you couldn't do animal sacrifices here because you're over in North Alabama. You can do physical circumcision. You could buy a physical circumcision and say that's still necessary, but you don't. That wouldn't be impossible because you're in North Alabama. You don't have to be in Jerusalem to do physical circumcision, do you, Jewel? And then everybody turned to Galatians 4:4. And again, I will thank the person in the audience that helped me with Galatians 4:4. I have it on one of my charts, no way I could find it. Galatians 4:4, of course, said, but when the fullness of the time was come, God sent forth His Son, made of a woman, made under the law. That proves that Jesus, when He was born into the Jewish law. That's the law He had to keep when He was growing up and when He was a man. Jewel said, under the law means under the curse of the penalty of the law. That's what he's trying to say. Well, let's read that verse. God sent forth His Son, made of a woman, made under the curse or the penalty of the law. You mean Jesus was under the curse or the penalty of the law when He was born? I don't think so. Jesus wasn't under the curse, never under the curse or penalty of the law. And, of course, my friend Jewel ignored Romans 3:19, which shows what under the law means. Under the law, now we know that what things soever the law saith, it saith to them who are under the law. That means if you're under obligation of that law, that's who the law speaks to. For example, the United States law. You know who the United States law speaks to? The people under the United States law. That's us. We live in the United States. It doesn't speak to the people in Canada or the people in England. That's the point of this. Under the old law, the law spoke to those who were under that law. Obligated to keep it. Now, the New Testament speaks to all of us, because we're now under that law. It simply means, under the law simply means obligated to keep the law. That's why it's so important, if I can find that chart. Yeah. To my left, I guess. It's so important to understand that, and here's the reason. In Galatians 3:24-25 says, wherefore the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ, that we might be justified by faith. But after that faith has come, we are no longer under a schoolmaster. Now the schoolmaster is identified as the law, right? And then verse 25 says that we're no longer under the schoolmaster, under the law. What we just learned from Romans 3:19 and Galatians 4:4, under the law means obligated to that law. That's the law we have to keep. And so now, when we say now, see now that once the system of faith has come, we're no longer under the schoolmaster, we're no longer under the law, that means we're no longer obligated to keep the Old Testament law. Wherefore, what was the purpose of the law? It was added to cause of sins, to point out what sin was, transgressions, till the seed should come. What would that mean, Jewel? The law was added till the seed, and the seed is identified as Christ in verse 16 in this context, till the seed should come.
What words mean anything to you? Well, that means that it wasn't applicable after the seed came. Indeed, that agrees with Colossians 2. It says that Jesus nailed the law to the cross. And then, in Exodus 12:49, Jill said, well, there's one law for the Jew and for the either said stranger or sojourner that's in your land. John, turn to that, and I'm going to ask you to read it in a minute. Exodus 12:49. If I can't remember exactly how I put it. But let's talk about this stranger or sojourner in the land that wasn't a Jew. This verse in Deuteronomy 31 calls the stranger in that is in thy gates. And notice in this verse it's contrasted with the alien in Deuteronomy 24:14-21. It says, thou shalt give it unto the stranger that is in thy gates, that he may eat it, or thou mayest sell it unto an alien. Now what this is talking about is a Jewish proselyte. A person that was a Gentile, and he proselyted into the Jewish religion. He was called a stranger. Well, in this case, maybe it's just talking about strangers. I can't even remember for sure. But there's a difference between the stranger in the gates and the alien. There, John, read that for us. Exodus 12:49.
One law shall be for the native born and for the stranger who dwells among you.
Okay. So the people who were proselyted to the Jewish religion and the Jews had the same law. But what about these aliens who weren't strangers in the gate? What about the aliens that weren't strangers in the gate? That law was not for them, according to this passage. So the strangers in the gate, these sojourners that were in the land, as John just read, it said they had to offer animal sacrifices for sin. Here's the passage. They had to keep the Passover. They had to be circumcised. They had to observe and do all the words of the law. These people that were strangers in the gates, these guys that were proselyted to the Jewish religion, Jew also had to do animal sacrifices. So does that prove, then, that we have to do these things today? All right, now, let me show you that the Gentiles were not under the law. Romans chapter 3, verse 1 says, what advantage had the Jews? Because unto them were committed the oracles of God. Unto the Jews were committed the oracles of God. That's the advantage they had over the Gentiles. The oracles of God weren't committed to the Gentiles. And then Romans 2:14, the Gentiles which have not the law. You see, the Gentiles never were under the law of Moses. I understand that the patriarchal law just continued on for them. The Gentiles were never under the law. Now, Buell is bringing out passages that said there's one law for the Jew, basically, and the stranger in the gate, meaning that's the Gentile that proselytes over to the Jewish religion. And yes, they had to keep that law. They had to keep the Sabbath. But they also had to do the animal sacrifices and the circumcision. As a matter of fact, you correct me if I'm wrong, Buell, but when that Gentile proselyted over to the Jewish religion, didn't they have to be circumcised right then? I'm sure you would know that better than me. I'm pretty sure that, is that right, Mr. Hall? They had to be circumcised. So according to your logic, a person today would have to be circumcised. But you don't believe that. So I don't really understand your point if you don't believe it. Now everybody turn to Galatians chapter 4, verse 24. Galatians 4, verse 24. Jules said there's only one law. But remember last time we read Galatians 4, 24, talking about Hagar and Sarah. It says, which things are an allegory for these are the two covenants. These are the two covenants. So there are two covenants. And then he said in Hebrews 8, verse 7, that the word covenant is italicized. And I'm glad you got around to finally responding to this argument, because I've made this argument at least twice. And he's right. In Hebrews 8, verse 7, it says, if that first covenant had been faultless, then no place should have been sought for the second. Covenant, you see, is an italicized word in the King James. But why do they add these italicized words? Because they think that the context shows that that's what the writer was talking about. And you can prove that. They have good reason for this. Look at this. Look at verse 6. But now hath he obtained a more excellent ministry, by how much more he is the mediator of a better testament. If I say that Lionel has got a better car than I do, that would imply there are two cars, right? So if he's saying here there's a better testament, that would imply there's a better covenant. That would imply there's a better covenant and a covenant that's not quite so good. So, which covenant is he talking about, verse 7? If that first covenant had been faultless. Even though it's a italicized word, it has to be talking about the first covenant, doesn't it? Because he just got through saying there's a better covenant. And then he says, he makes that even clearer, verse 8, for finding fault with him, he saith, behold, the day is coming, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel, with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day. So the first covenant was the one referenced in verse 9 that he made with them at Mount Sinai. The new covenant is the one mentioned in verse 8. So verse 7, first covenant would be the one at Mount Sinai. The better covenant, verse 6, would be the new covenant. You see that? And notice again, verse 13. In that he saith, a new covenant, he hath made the first old. First what? First covenant. Now that which decayeth and waxeth old is ready to vanish away. That's a truism. Anything that gets old and corrupt and rots or gets, that is worn out, he throw away. It's a truism. Now he's applying the truism to the old law. In that he called it a new covenant, that would imply the other one is the old one. And since it's old, if it's the old covenant, that means it's vanishing away. Now we already responded to this word forever, Jill. Again, he went through a few minutes talking about how the law was forever and things like that. But we've already pointed out that this same word, olam, is used in 2 Chronicles chapter 2, verse 4, talking about animal sacrifices are an ordinance forever. But Jill would agree with me that ended at the cross. And then in Exodus 40, verse 15, the same word is referring to the priesthood, calls an everlasting priesthood. Yet Jill would agree with me the Levitical priesthood ended based on Hebrews chapter 7, verse 12. Jill is ignoring this second definition. Sometimes in the sense of unlimited duration, sometimes in the sense of a cycle or an age. Or as Justinian put it, the second definition, it belongs to a whole race or people, and it comprehends all the time until their destruction. Do you know we have at least two different definitions for this Hebrew word, olam, that we're pointing out? Perhaps you're taking the wrong definition. Then in 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17, he said, all Scripture truly furnishes us into all good works. Furnishes us into all good works. Well, Jill, would that be animal sacrifices, the Levitical priesthood, and circumcision, the things that you don't think are still binding today? Why do you believe that animal sacrifices, Levitical priesthood, and circumcision are not binding today, but you believe the Sabbath is? Why? All of the arguments you make in favor of the Sabbath would also prove that animal sacrifices, Levitical priesthood, and circumcision are still binding. Jill, did you get that? All the arguments that you make in favor of the Sabbath still being binding. As far as I remember, every single one of them, if they were a sound argument, would also prove that animal sacrifices, Levitical priesthood, and circumcision are still binding. For example, he says, the law is forever. Therefore, the Sabbath is still binding. Well, included in the law is the Sabbath, but also included in the law is animal sacrifices, the priesthood, and circumcision. So that argument proves the same thing about animal sacrifices that it does about the Sabbath. And then Jill said, his word does not change. His word does not change. But Jill, you said in your first speech, and this is the best quote I could get, I did the best I could, you said in your first speech that the old law wasn't taken away, which then I responded to that. It wasn't taken away, but that it changed. Didn't you, Jill? You said the old law wasn't taken away, but it changed. And now you're saying his word does not change. You said in one speech, his word does not change. In another one, you said it did change. And then you remember the first thing he said in his speech? Second speech. Some things were a shadow, so they were not to continue. Now, he confirmed a while ago that's what he said. But now you're using a verse that says his word will not change. But in the first part of your speech, you said they were not to continue because they were just shadows. Well, okay, some of the things evidently don't change, is what your point is. But the things that were a shadow are to change. Well, Colossians 2, 16 and 17 says the Sabbath is a shadow. Tommy, you cheat me out of my time. Let's go back to Romans 7, 4 through 7 that we went through last night. Wherefore, my brethren, you are also become dead to the law. John, if I said you're dead to the law, does that sound more like you have to still keep the law or you don't have to keep the law anymore? Which one does it sound like? By the body of Christ, meaning by his death, I think that's what it means, that you should be married to another, even to him who is raised from the dead, but now we are delivered from the law. Ty, you see that? It says delivered from the law. That sounds more like that's saying you have to keep the law or you don't have to keep the law. Which one does it sound like? It says delivered from the law. You don't have to keep it, right? That being dead, wherein we were held, that we should serve in newness of spirit, not in the oldness of the letter. Verse 7, what shall we say then? Is the law sin? God forbid, and I had not known sin, but by the law, for I had not known lust. Except the law had said, thou shalt not covet. It turns out, even the Ten Commandments are not binding. He says, we're dead to and delivered from the law that says, thou shalt not covet. The Ten Commandments, which includes the Sabbath. Does that mean it's okay to covet today? No, the New Testament says teaches it's wrong to covet. Now, this word dan, the Greek word, means to be liberated from something, according to Thayer. Delivered means to be severed from, separated from, discharged from, loose from. That's what we've been saying the whole time about this law, that we're loose from it. As Ephesians 2:15 says, it uses the word abolished, which is this same Greek word. It, in reference to the law, it says, it's been abolished. How could you make it any more clear if you said you're delivered from this law and it's been abolished? Abolished. Thank you very much for your time.